Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, we are live on the air. We actually are. This is June 27th. Where's the time gone? I can't believe it. I'm getting ready to get on a plane. It's beautiful out, but it's too warm for me. I hope it's cooler in England when I go get over there. How about you down in Nashville?
Oh, please. Yeah. Let's not even discuss it. It's like, you know, you wear a wetsuit, and I'm not talking about the kind that you go in the ocean with. Yeah, it's just, it's hot here. But that's how it is here, and,
yeah.
You know, you just come to accept it, you know. It is what it is.
I can't even deal with this. And, you know, I'm in the city. I saw my Con Ed bill.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're a city girl now. Well, but you had a big house, so you're
kind of used
to. No, I
had a big house.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and I'm not saying that. Listen, my Con Ed bill is high for one person, just, you know, in a small apartment. But I have to tell you, I couldn't handle the heat. I had to put on the AC because the humidity here, I'm like in Nashville, is so, like, you know, so high that I was dripping wet. I mean, I walked in the door, and it's like it just hits you in the face. Unlike the heat that's out west, that's dry, but still, you need air conditioning.
Yeah, heat is heat, especially once you get past a certain age and you're used to those. Well, plus, when you lived in your house, you had trees all over, so you had a
True.
Little bit of shade, you know. Now
you're
a city girl again. You're in the concrete jungle, girl. Yeah.
I know, and, you know, Pat just came back. She went to visit her mom, and her mom's doing better. And, you know, for people who don't know, she's one of my best friends. And she went down to Florida, and in Florida is the only place, as hot as it can be, it's the only place I know that you still have to wear a jacket to go into places because the air conditioning is so high that you're freezing when you come out and it's sweltering. So she came back. And apparently she went into her apartment. She said to her husband, please turn on the air. I can't deal. Yeah, it's it's awful. It really is. So I don't know. But I don't mind heat. I just need it. I would like this heat, you know, get a little bit of a breeze, and there's none. So that's why the air. So
well, our buddies, the Cowsills, are in a plane today. Traveling to their next, so very graciously, we got a blast from our show past, and this guy is busy, May. So the fact that he's wedging in a few minutes for us, and we are pleased to welcome back Henry Gross. For those of you who don't know Henry, he actually has one of your favorite songs, is one of his hits, right, May? I mean, you love Shannon, and he has a one-man show. He also is going out, I think, again with Sean Anand. He's got a gig with Joan Brown. And before I spill all the beans, let's welcome Henry Gross back to dinner specials. Hey, Henry.
Hey, girls. By the way, I'm not going out with Sean Anand. That was a one-time reunion at Columbia University a couple weeks ago.
How was it, though?
I'm sure it would have been fun for you to go out there.
One time, it was fun one time. It was great fun. It was awesome. No, we all get along. We all get along, but, you know, for a founding member of Sean Anand, I'm not all that nostalgic. You know, I spent my life writing music, and I like to do that.
Well, listen, so. I mean, you're going out, you know, and there's Joe Brown. I mean, please, it must be great. It must be good.
Joe Brown is a dear friend of mine. For 30 years, what you hear is Remy barking in the background.
Okay.
Joe Brown is a friend of mine for 30 years, and we have toured together before, only this time it's going to be different. Usually when I tour with Joe, I do my show, then he goes on and does his. I'm actually going to be playing on his show this time, and it's just going to be the two of us.
Oh, wow.
I do this one-man show called One Hit Wanderer. and you know, wherever I can. And Joe, I talked to Joe about doing a one man show, and he was up for it, but he wanted me to be the band. So I said, okay. So we're gonna have a blast. I mean, Joe is just one of my dearest friends, and we've been rehearsing, and it sounds great with the two of us. So he plays banjos, mandolins, you know, ukulele, of course, and it's gonna be great.
I know.
So we're
gonna
be
gosh.
I'll
be there.
I love this. Are you coming to New York
October
at all?
October and November. I'm sorry?
Are you going to be coming to New York at all?
With Joe?
Yeah.
No. He tours in England. And he does exclusively England. We'll do 30 dates. And I'll leave end of September and get back, you know, first week of December. And then I'll go back to whatever it is I'm doing, you know. So it'll be good, and I'm doing my own shows, you know, all summer, you know, wherever I can, and it's I'm grateful for anything I get at this stage of my life, you know. You're not being a big brand name, I'm happy for all the gigs I've managed to get, and they're all great.
Well, that's great.
Let's talk a little bit about your one man wanderer show, Henry.
It's one hit wanderer.
So, right. So just the fact that it's that you can tongue in cheek say, okay, well, here, I'm a one hit wanderer, and take it out and hold the stage by yourself. The first time you did it, were you terrified?
No, it took me years to write the show, and I had two different directors, and the second director I had, Ed Greenberg, was a great, perfect match for me, and you know, my show is not a cabaret. It's actually written as a theatrical production where the songs advance the story. You know, it's not done like a cabaret. It's 90 minutes, and it's, you know, what I do is I have a box, a ratty old cardboard box, and I pull out memorabilia from my life. But while I'm talking about these things in my life that I went through, I think anybody, you know, 40 and up, certainly, and kids like it too, will feel that it's their lives going by. I mean, it's my story, but it's everybody's life. You know, it's like, it's a shared love of challenges, music. It's about, I talk about my father a lot and my, you know, people in my life. And but it's all done. It's scripted. Every word is scripted. It's not so, you know, it's an actual theatrical thing. It's 90 minutes and there's slides and pictures and blah, blah. And it's you know, visuals. It's really good. It's a fun show.
How long did it take you to put it together?
Oh, 10 years to get it to where it is now, because
wow.
It started out as one thing, and you know, it evolved and evolved, and then the first director that I got was actually, I was hooked up with this from the people that produced Jersey Boys, the Dodger theatrical people, and they got me this director that was a playwright, and also he taught playwriting. And he was going to direct the first pass of the show that we were going to do, and then they lost their funding. It was a whole deal, and anyway, it didn't come off. But I learned a lot from that guy, because I essentially got a course in playwriting.
Wow.
And so I was able to rewrite the show in the pattern that was acceptable to serious Broadway audiences. But, you know, it's a one-man show. It's not a big enough production for what's going on Broadway, but I've done it in that little playhouse on 72nd Street, and it tears people up, you know. It's not that easy to get gigs, because everything is based on star power. I'm not a big celebrity,
mm-hmm.
you know, brand name, and that's it. You could put on a crummy show, but if you have a celebrity in it, some people will buy tickets. It's hard to get. I get amazing reviews for the show, and I'm always delighted when the house isn't, you know, when the house is reasonably crowded, you know. So I'm doing it in Tucson on September 10th, and I'm hoping that's, you know, for a good turnout there. You know, it is what it is. The show, I did it in Augusta, Georgia. It was phenomenal. People just loved it. But you know, the people next door in the next town don't know about it.
I mean,
you know how it is.
Yeah, I do. And then, you know, I was just thinking, and the people that book you for these one-off gigs, I mean, had they seen you before, or is there?
Well, it's interesting, because I did it when I was working on it with this guy, Ed Greenberg, the second director. They were doing, you know, the bottom line, you know, Alan Pepper.
Sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
So Alan called me one day, must be 10 years ago, and he said, Henry, would you ever think of doing a documentary about your life? And I said, what are you talking about, Alan? Who wants to see a documentary about my life? He said, well, I know these two young directors that Ed had a partner, and they expressed an interest in doing a documentary about you. So I said, I'll check them out. So I went up to New York and met him. And with Ed Greenberg, it was like love at first sight. I mean, we just hooked up. I mean, we had the same sensibility. He's a really, really amazing person and writer and thinker. And it was great. So we started tearing up the show again. And then we did it at a theater in Irvington, at the Irvington Town Hall Theater. And it was great. I mean, we had a lot of friends of mine that were artists there. I mean, Felix Cavalieri was there, who said to say hello to you, May, this morning.
Oh, thank you.
And then Jonathan Edwards was there. There were a lot of people there, a lot of great people. And the show went down gangbusters. So we were supposed to, you know, a guy saw the show, actually, from Jackson, Tennessee, and he put the show on in the theater there a few times, and it did great. So... But I'm my own agent. You know, generally I get my shows by fans calling me saying, like an example, a fan wrote me on Facebook a couple of months ago and said, how come you never play in Oshkosh, Wisconsin? I said, well, how am I going to get a booking there? He said, well, my friend books Waterfest. So now I'm doing a show with Kansas at Waterfest, you know.
Oh, fantastic.
And all my shows are solo. You know, I play solo shows with the exception of when people demand a band, and if they pay me enough, I hire great musicians from Nashville, and we go and do it.
That's great.
Cool.
I mean,
cool.
I understand from all of that, because people have said the same thing to me, like, why don't you come and speak to us in wherever, you know, America?
Yeah.
And I said, because I don't have an agent either, so I always say,
right.
Well, if you want to have somebody talk to me, you know, and let's see if we can work something out. You and I we're like the ones that we don't have an agent, where everybody else have an agent. They go to all these places. And, you know, I'll tell you, there's one I found very interesting. One person who doesn't have an agent and he does all his own booking is Jay Leno.
Jay Leno doesn't need an agent. Jay Leno gets, you know what Jay Leno makes. And he basically makes a fat year's salary every half hour, you know. So I mean, I opened for Jay last year.
Oh.
And did great. Yeah. I mean, I've been lucky. I mean, somehow there's certain promoters around the country, especially in Florida, that really like me and have put me on with people as varied as Huey Lewis, Jay Leno, Loretta Lynn, you know, I do oldie shows sometimes, you know, I'll do like that oldies, you know, last year I did shows with Cleveland Still and the Dubs and Jay Siegel's, you know, Tokens. And
Jay was my former neighbor.
he's a lovely guy, isn't he?
Yes.
He's just great. And, you know, after all these years, I never just met him. I mean, there were, you know, Tommy Mara and the Crests,
right.
Tommy took over. The Crest from Johnny Maestro.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Johnny wanted Tommy to have it. Tommy Mara is an amazing singer.
He had such a great following, Johnny Maestro, because I've seen the shows. Because Lou Christie, who's a good friend of mine, would open up with, you know, and open up for them. And I just, you could just see it. And it's just amazing. You know, I keep trying to tell people, you want to know what the singers are? These are the singers that, you know.
Well, Johnny Maestro is like the best singer in the world. I mean, no one, you know, I remember when I was at Shanana, we were on Buddha Records and they had a convention and the Brooklyn Bridge was signed to Buddha. So if you remember those record conventions in the 60s,
absolutely.
You know, you'd go up to the Catskill Mountains and all the bands would play for the sales staff and all that and their friends.
Absolutely.
So we went out and we tore it up with Shanana. We were just great. And then, you know, of course, I was always a fan of Johnny Maestro's. I mean, I grew up in Brooklyn. So we go listen to the Brooklyn Bridge, and Johnny Maestro starts singing, and I looked at the guys in the band, and I said, you know, we really need to do something else for a living. I mean, this guy is in his own planet. But I mean, honestly, if you took that at face value, I mean, everybody else could have stayed home too. Johnny was just a real pure singer. I mean, fabulous.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm telling you, I was lucky enough to see him several times because, you know, Lou Christie would invite me to see the show.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, between Lou and Johnny Maestro, I mean, their voices,
yeah.
That was, you know what, it's so pure, it's so beautiful, and it was so wonderful to hear these songs that I grew up on, and you know,
yeah.
and they're still singing. And Jay Siegel, when I see him, I keep thinking, I cannot believe you're the voice in that, you know, Lion Sleeps Tonight, because he...
Yeah.
I can't believe he does that those high notes, and I'm just looking at him, you know. So
I think he's 76 years old or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great, which is encouraging for me because I still sing on all the original keys, but I'm only 65. Hey, I'm a young guy.
Well, you know, I mean, hey, listen. I mean, that's the one thing that even Lou puts in his act. I still sing in the same key I did years ago. I'm just amazed. I am just
you
amazed.
You know, I'll tell you, I played in Memphis 2 weeks ago Sunday, and the mayor made it Henry Gross Day in Memphis because I wrote over it in Square and songs, you know, I've been playing there for years, and I was really honored for that because to me that's the Grammy I always wanted, was to, you know, to
wow.
be recognized in Memphis, because to me
that's
the most
fabulous.
Important city for music. But you know, it was a great day, I just lost my train of thought because I got into that. But
yeah, we're just talking about all the different. Yeah, they're talking about all the different singers,
well,
and Johnny Maestro.
You know, Henry.
I mean,
no. Okay, so I said to the audience, they booked this gig right in this beautiful club called Lafayette's Music Room, and I've played there. I used to play there in the 70s, and a guy called Tommy Peters that owns all the B.B. Kings, he's renovated Lafayette's, you know, and it's beautiful now. I mean, it's really great. And so I'm playing there, but he booked me at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday, which is very funny. I never did a gig like that, you know, that time in a club, and it was packed. But I said when I opened the show, I said, "Welcome to the early bird special." You know, that's who we are now. You know, it was unbelievable.
Oh my God! Hey Henry, you and I should go out.
I'll just do
a whole talk, and you can sing after.
I'm telling you.
Yeah,
it was very fun.
So, Henry, I have to ask you. I always ask, you know, our musicians that come on. All right, let's take us back to little Henry Gross. Like, at what point did you decide, I like music, and I want to play music, and I think I'm good enough to play it in front of people?
Well, it's two questions, and the answers are my mom was an amazing musician, classically trained musician, singer, pianist, and sang briefly with the Metropolitan Opera Chorus before she got married, I think, for a very short period. Then she met my father, who was a pharmacist, which I like to say, a musician and a pharmacist, a match made in heaven to produce a rock and roller. But, but when did I start? When I was about, I used to listen to, how it started really was my mom taught me proper ways of singing when I was a kid, but I remember listening on my little transistor radio to a show that came out of Hayward, California by one of those bass healer guys called Brother Al. And he would actually get people to get up out of their wheelchairs on the radio. You know, you got to
wow.
love it. But he would play all this gospel music by James Cleveland and
right.
Mahalia Jackson and all. And they would sing these licks, you know, like down by the riverside, you know, they'd stair-step like Little Richard. And
right.
I realized I could do it. I would sing along with the radio. My mom heard me doing it. She said, wow. You know, she said I could do it. So I realized, because when I played, I've had one motto that served me well for 65 years, which is I never let a woman see me do sports. Never.
Oh,
you know, because I have no ability. I mean, my friends would hit a baseball, like, from here to, like, you know, the Mediterranean, and I would hit the ball. I'd swing as hard as I could, and it would bounce down and hit home plate. You know, I just had no ability for that. But music came pretty easy. So I was playing in bands. I actually was 13 years old when I played at the World's Fair in 1964 or 63.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I played the New Jersey Pavilion, by the way.
Oh, okay.
You know?
New Jersey Pavilion.
And I got the first laugh of my life. Because the piano player wanted to choke me because we were doing Ferry Cross the Mersey, And I kept singing, "So ferry to New Jersey."
Oh dear!
And I drove him nuts with it. I thought I was going to die at 13.
That's a great story.
But it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Oh my gosh!
There's a handful. The musicians that I know are the same way. They're not out playing sports. That you know.
No.
The real, you know, like my ex-husband, I mean, you know, sports did not interest him. I mean,
no.
When they just, you know, it's just about music. It's just about all that. So sports.
Well, that, and, you know, it's a cliche to say it, but really, I mean, we you know, I was a schlemiel, and I did it because girls liked me because I could sing. And it's
right.
As simple as that.
You're not the first one that's told us that, believe it or not. Yeah, music is a chick magnet.
Yeah.
Come on. It
well,
always
I'm telling
has
you, why do you think? Why do you think Bill Clinton plays the sax? You know, it's you know, it is what it is. For some indescribable reason, women like a guy that sings in a band. And I saw this. You know, we all saw Elvis, and we you know, even you know, John Lennon said, you know, he saw Elvis and said, "Well, that's a good job." You know,
yeah,
it's a good job. He was right. You know?
It's definitely. I mean, John definitely realized that early on. He tried his hand at nothing else was going to work. He only wanted to be a musician, and that's it.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Of all things Elvis are sacred to me. You know, I mean, I can't believe in my life, you know, that I got to be on George Klein's show 10 times. You know, and I have films on my website of me doing an interview with the great George Klein, who was Elvis's best man at his wedding and his oldest friend. He met him in fifth grade. He was in the class.
Wow.
In the classroom when Elvis sang Old Shep to the class.
Wow.
So just knowing George Klein and meeting all these people in Memphis, you know, that were around Elvis. I remember once I did, you know, George Klein still does Elvis radio on satellite on Fridays. And I was on the show one time and I got on and I thought I'd take the Mickey out of him. And I said, you know, George, you said the meanest thing anyone ever said to me in my entire career in show business. And you could hear his producer going, oh, you know, like, what now, you know? It was like everyone was freaking out, and George is apologizing. He said, well, Henry, if I said something to offend you, he said, what did I say? And I said, you told me that if Elvis was alive, you'd take me straight over to Graceland, sit him down, make him listen to a half a dozen of my songs, and he would have recorded two or three. I said, man, kill me now, you know? that was a horrible thing to say to a writer. You know?
Oh my
but,
gosh. Henry, is this material in your show? I want to see your show. It has to be hilarious.
The best material is in the show. I'm not you know, these are just stories, and these are all true stories. But we all have them. I just had I've always loved comedy as much as music, because comedy kept me close to my dad. I mean, we would watch, we didn't have much in common, but we could watch W.C. Fields together or Johnny Carson or,
yes,
you know, the Marx Brothers and have a lot in common. You know, we could watch Harold Lloyd climb the clock, you know. And
right,
laugh.
And that's exactly it. I mean,
so,
John's favorite comedian of all times was Jonathan Winters.
Oh,
loved
everybody.
It.
The thinking man's comic. I've had, you know, I know, you know, Richard Lewis told me he thought Jonathan, I know Richard, he said he thought Jonathan Winters was, you know, Jonathan Winters was a genius.
Yes, he was. And let me tell you, when John finally met him, he was over the moon. He really was over the moon. He goes, you can't believe it. Just who I just met. Oh, my God. You know, he's telling everybody. Oh,
well, he took Jonathan Winters took method acting to a new level. Forget Marlon
mm-hmm.
Brando. I mean,
yeah,
this guy
yep.
would go do Ma Friggard and stay in it for 2 months. They had to put him in an institution. I mean, this, you know, talk about a commitment to the art. I mean, this guy was hysterical.
I know. And you know what? He was terrific in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. I mean,
oh, he was terrific.
That was a group of comedians that it was just brilliant, that film, if no one's ever seen.
Yeah, and the one,
younger generation.
The most underrated one of all of them, to me, was Phil Silvers.
Oh,
because
I agree.
Yeah,
I mean, Phil
agree.
Silvers, suffered for the fact that so much of his life was spent in burlesque and in other things, and he wasn't filmed as much as he should. But Sergeant, let me tell you what a nut I am for Sergeant Bilko. You know, they released it, all the entire series, and but I read online that the British version was a much better transfer than the American version. So I bought a, you know, an all-region DVD player so I could watch the better version.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, and I since started collecting, you know, I have all the old British pictures. I'm a film
collector.
I do, too.
I that's the new thing. That's the other thing I got to buy, an all-region, you know, thing also. I'm with you.
You know, the funny part about it is if you go to a flea market and find a PlayStation 2 that nobody wants anymore, it'll play from anywhere. It's just a DVD player that doesn't have the blocker in it.
Really?
I gotta go and see if my kids don't want theirs.
Okay, a little techie reveal from Henry.
Well, you know,
I like
if
that.
You could actually go to some of these odd jobs, these job lot or whatever it is, and they sell a lot of those all regions for next to nothing.
Well, all it is, yeah.
So that's
all it
why.
Is a chip. It's just a chip, you know.
Yeah.
And they put it in. And you can get them online at the, I can't remember the names of these places, but, you know, they sell them online, and they'll sell you, like, the latest Sony DVD player or whatever DVD player, and they just put the chip in so that you can play Region 2 as well.
Right.
And it's
exactly.
It's good because a lot of movies that are, you know, you want to see of the British pictures will never be released here.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah,
especially the ones, the black and whites from the war years, they'll never be released in America. I mean, I'm sitting here looking at movies like right here. I Know Where I'm Going, Passport to Pimlico, Great Day, Whiskey Galore, Sleuth, you know, with Michael Caine, The Last Days of Darwin with Richard Burton, The VIPs, Too Many Crooks, you know, An Inspector Calls, The Life and Death of Colonel Blimp. You know, I'm a big fan for those wonderful English pictures from the 50s and 40s,
60s. True. Hey, listen, we're winding down, and, you know, is there any place where you're performing
a
tune?
I thought you – are you talking about life or just this interview?
This interview,
you got me nervous, man.
Mister. This
you
interview.
Me there. No, I am playing July 9th at the Red Dragon in Baton Rouge. I'm at Waterfest in Oshkosh on the 14th. On the 21st, I'm doing Portland, Ohio, a benefit for the Humane Society there. On the 23rd, I'm doing two shows with Peter Noon in Richmond, Virginia.
Now I know them.
And then I'm doing September 9th in – no, 10th, September 10th in Tucson, Arizona at JCC. I'm doing One Hit Wanderer that night. Then September 18th, I'm doing – the Levitt Shell in Memphis outdoors with the band, and then there's a possibility for some other dates coming in the meantime, and then I go to England to do 30 dates with Joe Brown.
Cool. Henry, is there a book in here somewhere? Are you doing a book? Did you do a book? Let us know,
you're the 2 millionth person to ask me, but I wonder, the only thing I wonder about is I wrote this one-man show before anybody started doing their one-man shows like Ray Davies, you know, and all these, and Colin Hay, before these, everyone, Cynthia Weil and Barry Mann, my show is as wonderful as those shows were. My show is different in that it's theatrically written. So it was an entirely different thing. But I thought, well, that would be great, you know, because people would come to see One Hit Wanderer. But it's difficult. So I wonder if I wrote a book, if anybody would want to read it, unless I changed my name to Paul McCartney.
Well, you know what, Henry? We're going to have to stay tuned because we're winding down to less than a minute of the show. But I think you're hilarious. And please keep us, you know, in tune and let Gary know what's going on with you because we're going to keep an eye. I mean, I think it's great. And
We want
you
back.
Go out there and break your legs, Henry. Break your legs, man.
All right. Well, I love you guys. And this was
a lot
of fun. And I'm so, the fate smiled on us and made it happen, and it's terrific. And as
good.
I say to everyone I love, I'll see you sooner than you want.
Goodbye, Henry.
Goodbye, Henry.
Take care.
Oh, my gosh.
Listen,
that's hilarious.
We're winding down.
Yeah, we're winding down. We got to fly.
And we're not
going to
be here next week.
No.
We're not being here next week. It's July 4th. We'll be back after that. Okay.
All right, May girl.
I'm signing
fly
off, and
angels.
I'm going off to England. I'm getting there.
All right.
Okay.
And I'm Cynthia Nielsen. That's May Pang. You've been listening to Dinner Specials on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great day, everybody.